Welcome to the first episode of Conversations in Kling, and we're lucky enough to be with Caitlin Walker.
Hello.
I'm joined by my co-host, Catherine Daly.
Hi.
And we thought we'd have a little chat about Kling. I know we want to talk in more detail about things like coding and stuff like that. So you've been travelling.
I have. We've been all over the place this year. Been to Moscow, we've been to Brussels, we've been to Boston, been to Sweden. On our way to Japan next month.
Why?
There's a huge pull at the moment. I think what's happening is it took us a little while to, particularly with systemic modelling, applying, you know, the application that I've developed to work with groups and organisations, it took a little while to codify it so that it was teachable. And then now that we have students learning, then those students go back to their countries, apply it, build up a network, and then it creates a pull. So rather than us selling courses, people are inviting us to come and train them in whatever activities they do in their country.
Okay. And that's, I've always wondered what the difference is between the countries. You know, is there, because if it was to stereotype, you'd say that one country's got a particular culture and another. And
do you know, people often say, what are some of the differences? They'll say, oh, you know, you go to Helsinki and if they really love you, they might uncross their arms. And it's the only thing I've noticed is that in some countries, it's you can't just ask them in a group to speak. You need to give them an instruction. Say, for example, say, okay, think about when you're working at your best. Remember a time when you have, when you're working at your best, you're like what? And take a moment to jot it down on a piece of paper. Then turn to a partner.
Okay.
And you can't just say, so when you're working at your best, you're like what? Who'd like to start? There'll just be radio silence. But that's not necessarily the countries you'd expect it to be. So, for example, in Malaysia, we found everyone very chatty. In Russia, people are very chatty. So, for example, when we're working in the Czech Republic, I noticed there a few times my starting questions to the whole audience just fell flat. And you just learn very quickly to pick yourself up and have something in your arsenal to say, okay, let's just start this differently. And now I would never start with a whole group exercise. You've got to build up the group trust before they answer. But really, I've found more similarities than differences between the countries that we've been working in. And that might be the people who are attracted to this kind of work.
Yeah.
And, you know, I think that's a really interesting thing about Kling. For somebody to be interested in Kling language, in adjusting their way of thinking, their way of asking questions in order to improve their communication, they're already along a developmental path. And what's going to be interesting that's shifted since we started running Drama Free in Moscow is by presenting Kling from a drama-free perspective, we're getting a lot more people who are more problem-focused rather than outcome-focused.
Yeah.
And that's then I think we're going to start to see some more cultural differences that are for that country rather than me seeing the similarities of the kinds of people who like this kind of work.
Yeah, because it's self-selecting.
Yes.
So drama-free, what's the relationship between drama-free and the sort of systemic stuff that you've been doing?
There is absolutely no difference in content. So drama-free is what we call Kling for Teams systemic modelling. It's what do you like when you're at your best? What do you like at your worst? A few Kling questions. A bit of the five senses exercise to understand how people perceive things differently. It's everything that we already do. But it was particularly when Svetlana Shapovalyants coined the term drama-free to describe this evening that I was going to do for her. And it started us all thinking, actually, if we reorganize it to start with the drama rather than the outcome, start with the problem, model out the problem. What do you like when you're in drama? What do other people like? What are the costs? What does it cost your life? What does it cost your company to be in drama? To start at that edge and then build in, that's the why that you're moving away from and that's what the Kling's for. We just found we can attract a different kind of person. It's made Kling much easier to sell, but in terms of the relationship of the content's the same, but the presentation's very different.
So does that mean that it'll always be drama-free style courses now, or is it?
No, drama-free is what you might call the gateway. It's the thing that attracts people. And as I said, we've we've had, I think the first time we ran it, we had 120 people. A year later when we ran it in Moscow, we had 500. And we had 120 for 2 days to take the course deeper. But then they'll go from that, they'll self-select that. The drama-free is using it for yourself. Systemic modeling is how do you use this to facilitate others? And I think that there will always be a more limited group of people who will want to take it that far.
Because that's one of the things I've always been intrigued about, is I've always struggled to define systemic modeling. You know, what is it? What's it for? So I thought I'd ask you while you've got a microphone.
It's the same as asking about clean questions. What are they? What they're for? It all depends. Systemic modeling is a group of tools, and they are small models that I've developed over the years to do specific tasks. So for example, with clean feedback is a model I developed to help people separate the why, their personal why for giving feedback from the evidence or the thing that they've perceived somebody else doing. And it's about separating evidence, inference, and impact. Clean setup is about separating out what the event that you'd like to have happen, your responsibility in it, and the support and resources you need. In essence, they're tiny mini interviews, they're mini clean interviews that a group can do with one another to uncover rich amounts of information. So systemic modeling, as I said, cluster of tools. If you want to run systemic modeling and create a systemic network or self-modeling system, then what it is it's a way of getting a group to be able to pay attention to itself. And when it goes into drama, so it's a set of tools to get a group to pay attention to itself and to notice, to check when it's gone into contempt and to quickly shift their attention to curiosity, to collaboration. So in some senses, it doesn't matter what that group is, whether it's a family. I turned up in America last week with my mother. I texted my brother, I WhatsApped him that I was on my way. He said he would collect us from the bus station. Half an hour before we get there, no reply. 5 minutes before we get there, I'm panicking. I try and ring him. So I text him rather than WhatsApping him. He texts back and says, I'll be there in 3 minutes. And I'm fuming. I'm already in drama in the family. I can't believe it. My mother's sick. He can't even be bothered to be here. But because I've got systemic modeling in my system now, and I've got Marion Way with me, I lean over to Marion and say, I'm completely in drama. She asks me a few questions. What have you seen and heard? What's actually happened? And what are you making up about it? And I can separate my evidence from the inference. So when my brother turns up, I can just say hi. And he says, why did you leave it till 3 minutes before you got here to text me? Because what I don't realise is the missing piece of information was he wasn't getting his WhatsApp messages because he didn't have Wi-Fi. And so if I hadn't had that systemic modelling in my system, my first interaction with him would have been in drama and would have set the tone for the whole holiday. But instead, a bit of information comes to the fore. I realise what's happened. I explain what had happened to him. Everyone's fine. There's no need. It reduces unnecessary conflict in teams and families.
Yeah, one of the you said as a throwaway remark once, systemic modeling gives teams choices.
Yeah.
About how they react with each other.
Yes, it means that you're not hijacked by your emotions and by your assumptions.
Yeah.
It just gives you just that little bit more choice, and therefore you don't do a load of stuff that actually you find out later was worthless.
And when systemic modeling is in your system, when did you notice it was in your system?
First of all, you know, obviously I did a couple of years of following David Grove and clean language and symbolic modelling. So I really, really had the clean questions. I know when I'm not asking a clean question. But that didn't change my relationship behaviour. That just changed my coaching modelling behaviour. I think it got into my system. It was when I started trying to explain it to other people. It's when I started realising what the rules were and that if I wanted to be congruent, I had to be an example of it. So, for example, when we took it to Richard Johnson, we took the work into working with the long-term unemployed, it was explaining to him, if you want the long-term unemployed to develop self-agency and find themselves work and not come into the benefit system except when they need to through, you know, illness or for short terms, you have to treat them. You have to start by treating them with full respect. If you haven't got that, you need to detect those signals in yourself and adjust your behavior, adjust your attitude before you adjust your behavior. So when I was trying to train other people to do that, I had to train myself to do that. You know, so probably about 2.5 years of developing the process, then it was a very strong rule that I needed to be an example of the process I was delivering. And it's not always easy, it still isn't. And you have to have people around you who can catch you out without shaming you, who can say, do you know what, I think you're in drama, not, oh, Caitlin, you're in drama, because that puts you down. But if you just say, do you know, I think you might be in drama about this, in a straightforward way, going, oh, okay, I am.
So the relationship between the clean questions, and again, you know, what's clean? You've got a bunch of questions which we can all learn. It seems that that's just one of the tools that goes into the systemic modelling toolset.
Yes. The way that David used clean questions, the way David Grove used clean questions in therapy, there were some meta messages. If you just use clean questions, there are meta messages that doing that produces. If I believe that I need to listen carefully to your language and use it with all idiosyncrasies back to you, then there's a high level of attention that I'm giving you, a high level of respect and a high level of trust that I have to give your system, that your system has all the answers in it. Otherwise, I have to give you advice or I have to have a preordained plan for you. So clean has in it a whole load of meta prepositions that when you apply that to a group, the other tools in systemic modelling are better ways that I found to teach a group to do that. So originally, I just used to ask them clean questions. And then I found the clean feedback helped them to understand the difference between their assumptions and the evidence. Clean setup helped them to prepare themselves and to be reflexive and to take into account their patterns and prepare for an interview or a class or co-training together. So each of those tools are to support what I think the clean questions did on their own. They're bolsters.
And that those sort of meta positions that you exhibit or must have in the use of clean questions, what kinds of meta positions are those? What's the...
The meta messages.
The
clean stance. So a lot of it is trust. It's that you trust that the system has wisdom. There is wisdom in the system. Either the person or the group. You have to be absolutely clear that you are not the expert on the system. You are not I'm not an expert on your individual system, and I am not an expert on the system. So it keeps you humble. You believe that a problem contains within it the solutions to the problem, so that a symptom will also have in it the seeds for healing. If it's an individual system, but in a group system, that the way I think about it in a group system with a symptom that's going on is that anything that gets people to act, that there's conflict, that underneath it will be a value that they are willing to act to protect in some way. And if you can pull the problem back, give it enough space to air, then the group can take all of that energy that's been involved in the conflict and it can use it, blow the wind in the sails of an outcome. So it's this idea that problems contain in them the seeds for healing. Let me just say them again. That I'm not the expert on the system. The system can learn. Yeah, and when there's drama, when there's conflict, yeah, I've said it already. Yeah, when there's conflict, the conflict is there because it's protecting something very valuable and therefore it's worth investigating with respect.
Which is awesome. I think all of us that have hung around clean and sort of incorporated clean into our lives. And I think you can learn how to use clean questions, but then there's another level of getting the sorts of stuff that you've mentioned.
Yeah, cleaning up your stuff.
I mean, how much do you use clean and these tools in your everyday life?
I don't model without a contract. So if you are a friend of mine, mm-hmm. I won't I won't be counting what you do. I don't do that. I don't do that unless I'm contracted to, or you're paying me.
Now, do you do it and not say? Can you stop yourself doing
it? No, I don't do it. I don't do it consciously. But I feel drama. I feel contempt really, really strongly. And that can be, I think it should come with a warning that if you get into systemic modelling, it can leave you noticing things that other people don't notice.
Yeah.
And that other people take for granted.
And then permanently frustrated with the world.
Yeah. Yeah. Just a little bit out of sync.
Yeah.
Of going, do you know what? That's just not necessary. That actually you haven't asked him a question yet. And I do sometimes intervene, but not in such ways that would ever shame anyone for not having the skills that I've got and not having the tools that I've got. So it's not in a patronizing way. It's just they haven't signed up to having this brought to their attention. But if I don't know, somebody says something and somebody else reacts in such a way that you just think that's to what they're making up. That's not to what that person just said. I might say something like, I read that the other way. Sorry, I didn't think that's what she meant. What were you actually meaning there? So I might intervene a little tiny bit like that. But what I wouldn't do is go, so you're in drama here. You're in a bit of inference there. You haven't actually asked many questions yet. So I think that one of the skills of this in your everyday life is to not make it everyone else's job to have learnt the stuff that I've made my life's work.
Or take a position, an expert position in a civilian situation. Yes.
Yeah, they haven't signed up to this and it's, you know, none of my business.
I have noticed that is one of the sort of safeties we use at work is, you know, yes, you might have the skills and ability to go and inquire as to why someone's had a really bad day. And you might have an inkling that actually it's quite deep and they need to talk about it. But they may not want to talk about it while they're making their first cup of tea in the morning in the joint kitchen.
And you better do it with a light enough touch that if they don't want to do it, you can tell quickly and scuttle off.
Yeah.
And wind your neck in.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I think knowing when David was working with clients, he had a very, very clear contract with them to change. And when Penny and James were modelling him and we were all first practicing with clients, we had a very clear model, a contract to change. With systemic modelling, you don't have a contract to change. And that's why I learned very different rules, because the teenagers that I first developed it with, I mean, they didn't have to stay in front of me, but they hadn't come to me. They hadn't sought me out. And you're working at a different developmental level. You're working with people who have got stuff going on, but that they haven't necessarily coded as a problem and they haven't sought help. There's just some stuff. And so I think it's very important to think about what contract you have before you intervene in any way.
And I think this concept of contracting, which from what I infer comes from a sort of more therapeutic and coaching world, that's relatively unusual out in the business world. I don't think it's an unusual salesperson who thinks carefully about what the people have turned up to participate in or something like that.
I agree that people don't think carefully about it, but I think people do have a sense of it and people know perfectly well when somebody breaks a contract with them. You know, your kid will know if you go to a clean language training course and you go home and start asking them coaching questions, they will balk.
Yeah.
They will say, stop doing that to me.
Absolutely.
Yep. So they know you've broken the social contract. And I think that we do know as adults and as children that this isn't appropriate. But with clean, because it's such a sharp tool, it can go really deep really quickly. And it's a beautiful, elegant tool. And therefore, I think that you need to be even with great skills, come great responsibility. And I think that the better you are at clean, the more you need to think about your contracting.
And also, I think if you're going to teach people clean, the safeties come in the next sentence.
Yeah. So, I mean, I think that those messages, you have to find your own way of messaging them, but it is really important. So we use adjacency. We say that the first thing somebody said to you, if somebody comes to you and says, you know, I am so stuck today, I think it's fine for you to say, wow, what kind of stuck? And they might say, do you know, somebody actually said it yesterday, I'm stuck like a cat in a drain pipe. And
there's a metaphor.
It was a metaphor. So I think at that point you can say, oh, what's happened that's caused you to be stuck? Rather than, and you're stuck like a cat in a drain pipe. Mm. What kind of cat is that cat? It's just not appropriate. What you could do is to say to them, do you know, that is a great metaphor. Would it be useful if we just stopped for a few minutes and I'll just ask you some questions just about the kind of stuck you are? And like, well, not to try and resolve it, just ask you a few questions. If you have that sort of casual contract, then I think you might be able to ask a few questions. A, make sure that you're good enough, but you might be able to start practicing like that. But even then, remember, they're not really giving you informed consent. Because once you've said what kind of cat and where did the cat come before it was in that drain pipe and what kind of drain pipe is that drain pipe, one more question further, and it's non-adjacent to what they first told you. They may not know, they probably won't know, where their unconscious stuff comes from. And the metaphors mediate between the conscious and the unconscious. And so two or three questions is plenty if you're in a non-therapeutic or non-coaching situation. Then come back to ordinary speech, because more than three questions, you're going to be, it might be fine, but it might not, and you don't know, and they might not know. So that's our thing, is it's all to do with adjacency.
Yeah, we tend to teach, don't ask more than two questions, mainly because we're a bit concerned that they may not be able to track where they are, but they can count to two. So Caitlin, thank you so much for spending a little bit of time with us. There's much more to talk about, and I hope we can talk again.
There's a new area that I want to talk to you about.
Oh yeah.
About coding in the moment. Okay. So hopefully we'll be able to get together and talk further.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you.
You're welcome.